So for the entropy junkies, sad news, no more entropy. See? No more entropy presentation. For the rest of us, hey, no more entropy. Okay? So with that, we continue the session, the last session before lunch. And do I see Chris? Yes, I do see Chris. You want to come?
Okay, the presentation is here.
Oh, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
And presentations will be here. Where will they be? Oh, hang on. The presentations are here. I was actually here earlier just to make sure that they had it. There it is here. Yes. I want to get able to get rid of this thing on the side here. Can we do a full screen? There we go. I'll just leave this open for now. Should we go? Just want to.
Get a minute break or so. We'll give a minute or two and then we'll start.
Thank you.
sure. Okay. So you want me to read it through?
Well, you can actually go back to the first slide, and then when you're ready to start, you can push down to the second or first slide.
Okay. Hello? Hello, everyone, once again. We have an interesting topic. Next topic is very interesting. As you can see, the room is, there's no seat. There's somebody standing. Standing room only. So it's importance of open source to the cryptographic module community. So all of us, or most of us, use OpenSSL, which is an open source, and it's going through some not to be, you know, supported kind of status. So, Chris, from Oracle is going to address that topic. So, welcome, Chris. And we have, Chris was a previous speaker at ICMC as well as ICC. ICC is the CC world, in case you are not a CC person, common criteria person. He has over 15 years of experience. He's worked with labs, FIPS lab. He was on the FIPS lab. I knew that. And then now at VendorSite. I probably did something. He sits on the Oracle's Crypto Review Board, which I guess talks about which algorithms to implement, and worked with OSSSI on first open source FIPS certification. I didn't even know it. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Nithya, and thank you to the organizing committee for allowing me to come back again and speak at this conference. One of the things that I got thinking after I submitted my presentation is, why would someone want to submit a presentation on OpenSSL or a controversial subject like OpenSSL at a crypto module conference? You're almost like putting a bullseye on your forehead by signing up to do something like this, but there's been some interesting developments within the OpenSSL project. Oracle has always been a supporter of the OpenSSL project, and with these new developments, I thought it would be interesting to share with the crypto module community. So my program agenda, what I hope to do in this presentation is to give a little bit of history of the OpenSSL project, and also the OpenSSL FIPS object module project, which many of us leverage in many ways in order to gain FIPS compliance. What I'll also do is look into why use OpenSSL FIPS object module, the advantages and disadvantages of using the FIPS object module. I also want to talk about the life cycle of the OpenSSL distributions, because there's been some recent postings or notifications by the OpenSSL project for which they're not going to be supporting some of those distributions in the near future, and I want to talk about a little bit about the impacts that's going to have to the crypto module community, and also the future of OpenSSL and the FIPS object module. Where do we go? So I'll start off by talking a little bit about the history of the OpenSSL project. The OpenSSL project had its roots. Its roots can be traced back to the mid-1990s with the SSL EAY project, which was a collaboration between Tim Hudson and Eric Young. Both of those are well-known cryptographers, and they kicked off this project many years ago to have something that the crypto module community could have in order to protect their user data. But what happened was, in 1998, both Tim and Eric decided to, they were hired by RSA, to my understanding, and they to start a new career in their, new life in their career in crypto development. So what happened was the project still had a lot of followers. So there was two gentlemen that actually sort of took the bull by the horns and decided to keep working with the code base. And those two people were Ben Laurie and Dr. Stephen Henson. They continued with the maintenance of the OpenSSL EAY project, but in many ways it came to the understanding that over time I think it needed a little bit of a new identity. And this new identity actually came from a suggestion from the Apache SSL mailing list. And that suggestion was to call it OpenSSL. So basically, in 1999, the OpenSSL project was born in December of 1998. Yeah, December of 1998, the OpenSSL project was started. It was mostly made up of volunteers, a small group of volunteers that continued to do maintenance on the code. There were some initial challenges in gaining acceptance of this crypto library because due to export restrictions. I mean, at the time in the late 90s, there was a lot of restrictions on how, you know, organizations picking up crypto and being able to export crypto. So there's some initial challenges of it gaining acceptance. But over time, they managed to overcome some of these obstacles. And in 1999, the first release of the OpenSSL project was released, and it was version 0.9.1. And that first distribution of 0.9.1 didn't have any FIP support. They just were able to get it released, a new identity, and be able to work and build upon that initial work that was done by both Steve and Tim. So that brings us to today. I mean, that work has continued. The OpenSSL project has evolved through many distributions of OpenSSL to a point now where we're at version 1.0.2D. That's the latest version of the OpenSSL that you can actually download and utilize. So a little bit about the project as we see it today, about the organization of the OpenSSL project. It's only made up of 15 people globally who upkeep the code, and most of these people are volunteers. So you look at, you know, the size of the OpenSSL code base and how many people are actually maintaining it. It's a wonder we've actually come this far for it to be widely accepted and widely used and also be maintained by this small group of people. There's two currently full-time paid employees who actually are paid to help, you know, do the administration of the code, with plans to hire two more. Now, I mean, you'd think that the size and you know, of the OpenSSL project, you'd think that it'd be made up of hundreds and millions of developers with millions of dollars, companies throwing money at these people. No, I mean, most of their funding actually comes from private donations and some you know, contributions from the community. So they don't have a revenue stream in order to help, you know, keep the development going on. They're mostly doing this on a voluntary basis. You know, and considering that, I mean, the project, the size of it is, I mean, you look at the 7.1 million web servers that use OpenSSL, whether it be 0.9.7 from the early versions to 1.0.2 where we are today. So there's a huge use of OpenSSL. And that doesn't include application uses of OpenSSL. That could be in, you know, routers, switches, you know, application uses of OpenSSL only. I mean, there's a huge, huge use of this technology. So, you know, just putting things into perspective of the size of this project and who uses this. So now I want to switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit about the history of the OpenSSL FIPS Object Module project. So back in 2003, Steve Marques, who was working for the US Department of Defense, embarked on a FIPS 140 project to validate a cryptographic toolkit derived from the OpenSSL distribution. So his motivation for doing this at the time was that there was exorbitant licensing fees from third-party toolkit vendors. I mean, he was going through his IT budget basically in 6 months in licensing fees because, you know, the cost of actually maintaining crypto was very, very high at the time. And he needed a cost-effective solution. I mean, they had no money in order to keep throwing at solving this problem of having FIPS validated crypto. So what happened was he approached John Weathersby, who was at the time, director of the Open Source Software Institute. And they managed to come to an agreement where John was able to get them to create a fork in the OpenSSL distribution to isolate a FIPS crypto code only distribution such that, and there's three reasons for doing that, such that they can try to get a FIPS compliance. the first reason for creating this fork was that it was required in order to maintain a means to replicate a build process of the FIPS object module such that it was repeatable every time FIPSCanister.all was built and could be linked into, you know, other applications or other distributions of OpenSSL. So this was critical in that we wanted to make sure that if we put this code through a FIPS validation, the end user could actually use the same process to build the exact same code in order to put it through or to in order to build a FIPS-capable object module and be able to claim FIPS compliance. Secondly, hash calculated with FIPS canister and verifying it with a hash published in the security policy guaranteed that that exact same code that was validated could be used to build the FIPS object module. So you basically maintained integrity that no one could actually, vendors couldn't modify the code and for their own purposes and try to claim FIPS compliance without actually having it validate the actual hash that was calculated over the FIPS object module. And thirdly, the CNBP wanted a contiguous boundary created in memory that allowed for integrity checking. So they wanted to make sure that they knew where the actual FIPS object module lived in memory such that if it did change, if a bit was flipped in memory and you performed an integrity check on that module, that it would fail. So those were three key components for that was required in order to help validate this toolkit. The strategy also allowed for the maintenance of OpenSSL distributions without affecting the FIPS validation status. So because we've isolated that cryptographic code in the fork distribution, and that didn't change, FIPS object module could be rebuilt and linked into future distributions without actually affecting the validation status. So you can still perform maintenance on the full OpenSSL distribution without affecting the cryptographic code. And as long as that cryptographic code didn't change, you can maintain your validation over the life cycle of the OpenSSL distributions. So based on having this strategy, we were successful in getting the first OpenSSL FIPS object module validated in 2006. And this was based on a 097E fork of the OpenSSL distribution. So after we were, you know, said, hey, yeah, we got it done. You know, we got the first FIPS module validated. The DoD came back and said, well, we still got a lot of work to do. They're still not secure. You know, there's still tweaks that could be made. There's performance enhancements that need to be made to make sure that this code is more secure. So vendor cryptographic module community then started to take notice and say, geez, you know, there's value in having this FIPS code because, you know, it's there. You know, we can make contributions and we can make it better. And, you know, we don't necessarily have to continue doing our own maintenance of the FIPS, our own, you know, cryptographic code. So at that time, I think we started to see a little bit of a shift where instead of companies doing their own crypto development in many ways, they started picking up OpenSSL because they saw value in it, right? The code had a chance to be scrutinized by, you know, a vendor community that was interested in contributing to it, making it better. And it also afforded them the luxury of having more resources in order to do crypto development, do other development that was not cryptographic related. So, also, as OpenSSL evolved from the first validation, which was based on 097, to 098, to 1.0.0, to 1.0.1, to 1.0.2, these were like major releases within the OpenSSL project. FIPS support was provided in all of those validation distributions. The current validation certificate is 1747 and is supported by the 1.0.0, 1.0.1, and 1.0.2 distributions of OpenSSL. So now I want to talk a little bit about why use open source cryptographic modules. Well, the obvious choice is cost. I mean, it's free. OpenSSL basically is free, with the exception of, you know, subject to licensing conditions. You want to make sure that you're following the GPL license for, you know, downloading and using OpenSSL. I mean, there's literally no cost in order to pick it up. Also, too, I mean, licensing third-party toolkits with FIPS support, it's very costly. I mean, if you're a small company, you know, you may not have the deep pockets in order to spend to license third-party toolkits. If you're a big company like Oracle, I mean, we do leverage third-party toolkits because we can. But, I mean, not everyone can do it. So, I mean, if you're a small company, I guess, and many are, I mean, when they initially start, I mean, they look at at cost and having this solution, you know, met a lot of their requirements. Low internal maintenance of OpenSSL. So maintenance of OpenSSL is mainly done by the OpenSSL development team. So if an organization picked this code up, you know, they can just leverage be able to build a FIPS object module. The OpenSSL development team were responsible for doing most of the development. So, I mean, you could leverage that. You don't necessarily need to do your own internal development in order to maintain the code base. If allowed engineers to actually continue to focus on new development, you know, provide those next generation features that your customers wanted, and not do crypto development. New updates could be easily picked up and integrated into OpenSSL, so it wasn't something that your internal organization needed to do in order to continue to maintain the cryptography or maintain the FIPS compliance. That was normally done by the OpenSSL project. They normally pick that stuff up. It was also easily scalable, such that, I mean, even if you wanted to build a new product and you needed to have crypto support FIPS, have FIPS support in your product, you can download OpenSSL. You can also do your own modifications to it and build upon what was already validated, and not have to start from scratch to build a brand new FIPS module with all the FIPS requirements. So, I mean, it meant that it allowed you to have more flexibility to do more internal development on product features as opposed to doing crypto development. Another use case for OpenSSL, transparency and acceptance by the open source community. I mean, OpenSSL has been around for quite some time and is widely deployed, as I said. You know, 7.1 million web servers use it, plus countless routers, switches, software application vendors, operating systems, they all use it. Right, so it was widely accepted within industry. And as I said, many crypto vendors stopped doing their own crypto development because, I mean, why reinvent the wheel when OpenSSL is out there? It's already been vetted by the CMBP as part of its FIPS requirements, also within the vendor community. I mean, obviously, the vendors have actually contributed to trying to make it more better by fixing any bugs or notifying the OpenSSL development group if there are any bugs. So. It gained a lot of acceptance within industry. And as I said, I mean, large organizations or a large group of organizations and developers contribute to make it better, and it still happens today. I mean, everyone is still contributing to make the OpenSSL project a success. Now I want to talk a little bit about disadvantages of OpenSSL and the open source crypto module. Well, if a bug does come out in the OpenSSL, the maintenance is out of your control. Really, you're at the mercy of the OpenSSL development team in order to fix any bugs. And times may not be on your side. So even though the bug has been published publicly out there, you know, you don't necessarily, and people understand that, you know, if they find out that the bug is in your product, you go, well, you know, I may not, you know, I got to wait until OpenSSL comes out with a fix in order for me to fix this bug. So time is not on your side. You also may need to rely on OpenSSL to recertify. So if a bug does come out and it's, you know, your customers understand that, you know, it has cryptographic implication, it could have a business impact where you can't sell your product because your customers know that it's buggy. So that's also not a good thing. And also, one size may not fit all. You know, I mean, OpenSSL is not for everybody. I mean, it's the 80-20 rule. I mean, most people are able to leverage the OpenSSL module as it is, but not, it doesn't apply to everybody. So, you know, you still need, in many cases, the crypto module community still needs to do its own crypto development in order to meet those use cases where OpenSSL is not a non-factor. Now I want to talk a little bit about the current life cycle of the OpenSSL distributions. So, recently, the OpenSSL development project posted some notifications of end of life of some of the distributions of OpenSSL. The first, 0.98 and 1.0.0, are scheduled to go end of life at the end of 2015. Now, a FIPS object module associated with the 0.98 distribution, and that certificate, that's version 1.2.4 of the FIPS object module, certificate number 10, 1051, will no longer be supported by the OpenSSL Foundation. So although the module is still validated, it no longer will be supported by the OpenSSL Foundation or the OpenSSL project. So vendors must upgrade their OpenSSL distributions to 1.0.1 or 1.0.2 of OpenSSL to continue to have support for a FIPS object module. You must upgrade to version 2.0.10 of certificate 1747 to continue to have support for 101 and 102. So we'll talk about those two distributions next. So 1.1, or 1.0.1, sorry. Distribution of OpenSSL is scheduled to go end of life 2016. So we've only got a little over a year left before 1.0.1 goes end of life. So if you're using that now, you really need to start thinking about migrating to 1.0.2. Now the good thing is that FIPS object module 1747 is still supported by 1.0.2, so I don't think it's going to be a large impact for vendors to upgrade to 1.0.2 and maintain FIPS support, because that still will be supported for at least a little bit of time. They also posted the end of life schedule for 1.0.2. 1.0.2 is in essence going to be around until December 31st of 2019. So we can continue to leverage FIPS object module version 2.0.10, certificate 1747, until 2019. But after 2019, basically the start of 2020, FIPS support is no longer going to be supported within the 1.0.2 OpenSSL distribution. So a storm is coming. So here I want to talk a little bit about now the future of the OpenSSL and FIPS object module and some of the implications that we're going to see coming in the near future. Recently, NIST posted a draft of 800-131A in July of 2015, which specifies a transition of non-compliant Diffie-Hellman, EC Diffie-Hellman, and RSA in 2018, which means that, in essence, in order to maintain a FIPS-approved key agreement method, you have to have compliance and testing for 100-56A, or 800-56A, sorry. Because those are the only FIPS-approved protocols, 800-56A and 56B. What this means also is the FIPS object module, currently as it is right now, is not fully compliant with 56A and 56B key agreement. Only the primitives have been, for EC Diffie-Hellman, have been completed, not the KDF. So it's only a partial conformance. Diffie-Hellman was never tested as part of 56A, and RSA is not compliant with 56B key agreement. So in essence, what's going to end up happening is that there's going to need to be some development in order to bring FIPS object module into compliance with 800-56A, 56B, and also 800-131. The sad part about it is that there's no development. This development is not planned within the OpenSSL project. So this is going to be a problem. What's also coming down the pipe is the introduction of OpenSSL distribution version 1.1. 1.1 is a distribution is set to be released in April or May of 2016. That distribution is a rewrite of the OpenSSL code base to remove legacy code, fix bugs. It's the next generation of OpenSSL, and the API is changing, so no backwards compatibility with FIPS object module 2.0.10. So you think, well, why is this a problem? Well, FIPS object module and FIPS 140-2 support requirements are not supported or not implemented within the OpenSSL 1.1 distribution. So basically what they've done is they've stripped out all of the FIPS requirements in this new distribution of OpenSSL 1.1. So if vendors I'll talk about implications about that. So it's going to be a big problem, I think, in the future for vendors who actually leverage OpenSSL. Implications, organizations requiring FIPS validated OpenSSL will have limited solutions. I mean, right now, through my research, I haven't seen any third party FIPS 140-2 solutions that support the OpenSSL distribution 1.1. I mean, it's still in development, but I haven't seen any or heard of any plans in order to support that distribution. So So that may mean that vendors may have to do their own modifications to OpenSSL based on not having a solution. It's going to mean vendors will have to do their own hire their own cryptographic developers to do it, because right now they don't have these staff on hand in order to do these modifications. Another implication is that making modifications to a code base of over 500,000 lines of code is very risky. I mean, you look at the intricacy of the OpenSSL code base. There's a lot of interdependency. So, I mean, by hacking OpenSSL, you could potentially create more vulnerabilities in your product if you had to do it yourself. Also, the quality of cryptographic modules to the end user may differ from vendor to vendor. So, I mean, for some vendors who have cryptographic developers on staff in order to help do the development, do this updates to create a FIPS module from OpenSSL, they may have a better quality module than someone who may not have those developers and expertise in order to hack OpenSSL. So I see in many ways there's a chance that the quality of the crypto that we're giving our customers is not going to be the same. So I see that as being a potential problem. Money won't solve the problem. You think that, OpenSSL has no funding, you just throw money at the problem, they'll be able to do the work and all will be well. Well, at this time, I think it's not going to work. I mean, Oracle did try to reach out. We've always been a supporter of the OpenSSL project. And at this time, we did reach out to Steve and ask him to help, along with a few other vendors, to help solve this problem by trying to create a next generation of OpenSSL. And they came back and said, well, we're not interested in providing a solution at this time. Part of it, the reasoning, too, is that we're dealing with sort of a crossover between two standards, FIPS 140-2 and the next FIPS 140-3. I think that has some of the problem. That's one of the issues in why I think that they're not ready to start a solution, because I think the overall strategy was if we could actually put through a solution for either a private label certification and then OpenSSL being able to leverage that work in order to put through their own, it may be that we may be certifying under different standards, 140-2 versus 140-3. And I mean, we don't know what 140-3 is going to look like right now, so it's a huge risk. So it's going to be a problem. So, I mean, what can we do in order to help solve this problem? Participation in the Crypto Module User Forum Technical Committee. I mean, this is a group we just started. We're trying to get some build on the momentum in order to help vendors who have problems in getting modules certified to work within a community to help, collaborate and come up with solutions to help hopefully try to solve some of these problems. It's going to require input from the CMVP. I think the CMVP needs to be part of, the Crypto Module User Forum, and also help possibly in coming up with a solution of our OpenSSL problem. I think they need to work specifically with the industry and possibly government. Government needs to be involved too to help with the solution, in order to help advocate, the use of OpenSSL within government to make sure that, we have interest going forward that they're able to support their internal requirements. So we need to understand what those requirements are and hopefully work with the CMVP and the Crypto Module User Forum in order to come up with a solution. And that pretty much summarizes my presentation. So I will have opened it up to some questions if people do have questions on this information. I know it's a lot. There's a lot to digest, but .097 to basically 1.02 is where it is today.
Right. So those were used to build the OpenSSL FIPS object module.
Well, what's happened is that as the OpenSSL distributions evolved, right, from 0.97 to 0.98 to 1.0 and 1.0.1 and 1.0.2, They've had to, the actual FIPS object module has changed. So what's happened is that there was a build process. When we did the first validation, we created a build process or a validation strategy in order to validate the cryptographic components only, which actually was separate from the protocol stuff where you see a lot of the vulnerabilities that have come out more recently, like Heartbleed and the like, right? I mean, FIPS object module was never affected by Heartbleed. It was the actual full protocol within OpenSSL distributions that were affected. So, I mean, once those vulnerabilities became public, I mean, the OpenSSL project was able to create patches for those vulnerabilities, and vendors were able to take the FIPS object module, which in itself, when it was validated, has a separate fork of only the cryptographic code only, link that back into the main distribution and maintain certification. So the actual object code, the cryptographic code, is never changing. It's the components around the environment that was always changing. And that's allowed us to actually maintain, you know, the validation status by not actually validating every version of OpenSSL, such that if a patch came out, you're certifying the whole distribution and not actually the cryptographic components, which is more important to the cryptographic module community. It's a segregated subset, if you want to look at it, that we've isolated in order to claim our FIPS compliance.
And right. I mean, I don't know from the vendor's perspective how clear they are on that and what's actually validated.
They are, because what's happened is that over time, I mean when the vendor community, like, you know, Oracle, you know, I know Cisco, I mean, a lot of vendors have actually picked up this code base. And when they go to build product, in many ways, they leverage a lot of the FIPS requirements that's in the FIPS object module, like for self-tests and things like that. So they're able to, instead of actually having to rewrite the entire FIPS requirements, like the known answer test, the integrity tests, all of those things, instead of doing it from scratch, they're able to leverage that work that was done by the original FIPS object module and build upon that in order to validate their own. So they wouldn't necessarily, rely on FIPS object module only that was done by OSF, they would probably take that code base, make some tweaks to it, and then put their own certifications in. So they made it scalable to allow for, you know, future development or to build upon that project.
Right. I mean, you look at the certificate, you look at the operating environment. And it's just
that's because everyone is using it, right? That's right. Or they want to add support for a specific platform. They want to make sure that it's tested on a mobile platform versus like a server platform or a client, desktop client platform. So you look at, there was over 100 platforms at one point that's tested on it. So, I mean, the government agencies want to have some kind of assurance that, you know, I can build this module on this specific operating system and at least had to be able to make some claims of FIPS compliance.
Well, this is it, absolutely.
And this is what a lot of vendors, including Oracle and many other vendors, have been doing for many years, right? But the time is coming in the not too distant future where we're not going to be able to do that, because they've actually, in essence, stopped support of doing any particular maintenance for providing any level of FIPS support. David?
I've got a different question. It's about the 15 saintly volunteers. So my experience is not that this is for lack of volunteers, but they're actually a closed group that act as gatekeepers. And the way we get code updates into OpenSSL is to find one of them and give them a lot of money. Why is this the case? Why is it not a more open organization where we can have very competent engineers who are doing good work sort of contribute to it and
That's a good question. I mean, why haven't someone in the private sector taken this project on? I mean, I guess no one's really volunteered in order to take this on, in order to do this. I mean, RSA did for many years, but I'm not sure if you all know what RSA is.
Well, I'm saying we volunteered, we contributed code. They said, no, you have to go to this guy and give him money, and then the code got in. It's not great.
Well, but at the same time, I mean, how do you actually expect this project to continue without someone contributing something? Right? I mean, it's not, you can't expect to get something for free forever. I mean, obviously over time it's going to cost something, right? And I mean, Oracle has done for many years that we've provided support to these guys to help try to keep the project moving, as well as other government agencies have provided like money to help support this project. But I mean, it's you can only do so much with a certain amount of money. Right? It's not right now. It's not scaling, and that's one of the major issues. Is that I mean, this project has gotten very, very big. A lot of people have become to depend on this code base, and now it's like they're pulling the rug from under our feet in many ways, and now we've got to come up with other solutions.
Hi, Chris. I'm Valerie Fennick from Oracle Corporation. I manage the cryptographic technologies team for Solaris. A reply to David's comment. We've been actually supplying fixes and changes to OpenSSL for years without giving them a direct bundle of money. We did this last year. Oracle did sponsor them as a platinum sponsor for $50,000. And I actually highly recommend anyone here who does give a crap about this project. It is hard work to get a large corporation to give a large sum of money, lots of approvals, lots of POs and all of that, but it is well worth the effort because these guys are saints, but we have been able to get changes up into the upstream before we had done that, specifically for our architecture improvements, but also we had found bugs with static analysis and they were very welcome to take those changes. So it is about establishing a relationship. They don't want dump and runs. They are really hardworking folks, and I really appreciate you bringing attention to this issue, Chris. Thank you.
You say that, you know, they don't want to take on the problem, or, you know, there's only 15 people. Well, when Heartbleed came out, you know, a bunch of people took a look at the code and went yick and forked it, right? So there's Google doing boring SSL, there's Libre SSL, and one of the first things those groups did is strip all the FIPS out of it, right? Because they looked at that as just complications, and they're trying to make it simple, they're trying to prove it works, they're trying to get bugs out. And I'd argue FIPS has a problem with convincing, you know, that commercial sector, right, that meeting the FIPS requirements in a crypto module is important.
It is important for many people. I mean, you look at the OpenSSL project has split off into
certainly
SSL.
Google doesn't think so, right? So,
But there are, I mean, that's just one company. I mean, there's a lot of people, I think, in this room that think that this project is important.
Sure, but we're all selling to people who require FIPS, or, well, I'm a vendor.
Right.
Selling to people who require FIPS, or we're in the FIPS business.
Right.
I'm talking about, the rest of the crypto world out there doesn't seem to put a priority on FIPS.
And I agree. I agree. I mean, FIPS is a very, very small, community and component of the actual end users who use this. I mean, most people don't give a damn about FIPS. And in many ways, they say, well, why do I have to do FIPS? Because it's made the product less secure. And I've heard that from the OpenSSL developers, too. They say, we don't believe in this project because, you know, it doesn't make our distributions more secure. In many ways, it makes us less secure. But at the same time, there's a huge. I think the more people there's a larger people are that actually need to have this type of support, and no one has really stepped up to take it on over time, you know. So this is where we've gotten to the point where we've become so reliant on this technology now for a long time, and thinking that it was going to go on forever, and you know it may not. Yeah. It is really murky at this point. I mean, RSA announced earlier this year that they're not going to be supporting BSafe anymore. They've stopped doing new development on it. So you may be able to still pick up BSafe, but what's in there now is what's going to be there forever. They're not going to continuously maintain it. So the industry needs to look at other solutions. I mean, that's out there. And to tell you the truth, what I've seen out there right now, I mean, solutions that are OpenSSL based, I haven't seen many, specifically to cater to the new distributions of OpenSSL, the next generation of OpenSSL. I mean, there are solutions out there now that'll address your concerns, I'm thinking, for the current distributions of OpenSSL that go as high as 102D. I mean, sure, you can actually are able to get solutions that to meet your FIPS requirements from third-party vendors, but I haven't seen anything for the new distribution of OpenSSL 1.1 that's coming out in the future, and that couldn't have impact on, as an example, TLS 1.3, right? The landscape has changed. I mean, with the coming of 140-3, it makes it difficult to design a new module because really we don't know how that new module is going to, you know, if it's going to be FIPS 140. I mean, we need to understand sort of what the requirements for FIPS 140-3 are going to be, I think, in many ways. I mean, that still hasn't been finalized with respect to, you know, how the IGs are going to roll out, or are all the IGs going to be applicable in 140-3 as they are in 140-2. Right, and doing an open source validation at this point is very, very risky. This is not to say that maybe next year at this time we may have an announcement that, by the way, they decided to pick it up again. But at this time, you know, today, we don't have another solution. Two thousand twenty is the transition. So you can continue to use the FIPS object module 2.0.10, which is the latest version that's publicly available on the OpenSSL website. That has been FIPS certified, and that's going to be supported in distributions up to 1.0.2D. And a 1.0.2D is the latest. So as long as 1.0.2 evolves, you can continue to have FIPS support. And that date is 2020. Once 2020 comes, 1.0.2 is not going to be supported anymore, and neither will support for the FIPS object module 2.0.10, which is the latest where it is today. It's not going to have support. So, as I said, there's a new generation of OpenSSL coming out, but there's no FIPS support for it.